This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you are listening to Hear Me Roar. Co-hosting with me tonight, we've got some fresh meat, as they would say, wouldn't you say? Or some virgins, either or. You're not really virgins. Andy Noonan. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
You're not really a virgin because you've been on Rainbow Report and all that sort of stuff.
I have, yeah. I was a bit of a semi-regular on the Rainbow Report for a while and before finished it finished up.
Yeah, and you're also a writer.
Yes, I write for Southern Star.
Oh, she's a bit famous. She's a bit famous. We've also got another famous person, Anne-Marie, because you can do somersaults and stuff, can't you?
I'm so glad you called me famous, too. Good evening.
You're only famous because you've got an accent, that's all.
And I play it, baby.
Yeah, she's actually Italian. Later on this hour, we're going to be talking to Deb Roget, and she assists individuals with disabilities and their families to imagine and enjoy lifestyles that are enriched with the same opportunities as other citizens, which is a terrific job, I would say. So I'm looking forward to meeting Deb. Now, what is in the news, Andy?
I've got a few things. As everyone probably knows, it was International Women's Day on Monday, and there was a few events in Australia, across Australia. Nothing too huge, but there was a few things. But I guess it's a good time to sort of look at some of the statistics. In Victoria particularly, women are still paid 15% lower than men, and only hold 8.3% of board directorships in the top 200 Australian companies, which is still pretty bad when you look at that sort of figure.
Didn't I read recently that they were saying that they're actually going to make it, you know, like so many percent of boards have to have, say, 30%? Where did that come from?
They did, and it sort of sprung from a big meeting of a lot of CEOs around Australia, and there was only a tiny representation from women, and there was a bit of a controversy about it because it was that the age-old argument of, you know, are people just there because they're women or whether they're actually qualified for the position. So there was a bit of a debate that sparked off about it, but nothing's come of it since, as it never does.
So what do you think, Anne-Marie? What do you think? Do you think that there should be actually, say if you've got a 100 board member component, do you think 35% have to be women? Is that...
I think you need to start stripping it back or go back a few steps. I think you need to start looking at access to, you know, better jobs, better training, better education for us, for women, in order to take those steps.
You can't just get it because you're a woman.
No, yeah. No, I don't think that's right. I think we're all human beings. I think that if you've got the talent and you've got the skill, you're qualified for the job, then your gender shouldn't be in the way.
What do you think, Andy?
I agree, definitely. You're right. It's about providing opportunities in different ways, and there are certainly ways of going about that. And you know, so even at a university level, offering scholarships so people get the training in the first place to be able to be well placed to be in jobs. I know they do that for certain areas like engineering, but we could certainly be doing more on that front.
Just speaking specifically to that issue, there's an organisation called BPW.
Right, it's at a petrol station.
It's Business Professional Women, and they work on behalf of women in their careers, yeah? Mm-hmm. They look at advancing the rights of women within the workplace. So I think what I'm saying is that there are some organisations out there that do it. We don't always know who they are or how far those advances are.
Mm. And again, it's a money issue always.
Do you think the old statement, oh, they're just going to get pregnant anyway and go, what's the point of putting money into their training? Do you think that still happens?
I think that thought is definitely still there. And I think in some way it does impact on the way things are as well. I mean, I think it does reflect. I mean, at a certain age is when people sort of move into those senior positions, and unfortunately for women that tends to be childbearing years, so... That is a bit of a contributor, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you think? Give us a text, 0427JOY949. You can call Dr. Goon, as we call him, on 1300JOY949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. What is your opinion about mandatory numbers of women on boards? Yeah. What else have we got?
In good news, and sort of on that topic, today the Australian Council of Trade Unions have actually launched, or are set to launch, a test case for pay equality for women, because as we know, across the board, it's around 17% that women are paid less than men. So ACT President Sharon Burrow actually announced today that the Australian Services Union are actually going to put forward a case with the Fair Work Australia. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. And there's actually a big movement that sparked off last year about this particular case. So hopefully something will happen and this 17% will actually reduce to zero.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing is that people think, well, as employers, they think, well, I'm paying Joe $372 and I'm paying Jane $372. So they think actually there is equal pay already, but there's not, because we're talking about superannuation, we're talking about leave, we're talking about the women in casual positions because they're trying to work part-time to support families and so forth. Anne Marie?
Yeah, you can see me thinking there.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah. No, don't, you'll throw me off. She throws me off quite well. Yeah, no, you threw me off.
It's all over.
So what do you think about the equal pay? Do you think there is room for change, or do you think the misconception is, look, it's there already, get over it, girls?
No, and it's systemic. We just need to look, so let's go for it. Let's talk about patriarchy, shall we?
Okay.
Let's talk about our system, our society. Let's talk about structures that are in place that support the status quo, which is the way it is now. So that's what I was trying to get to before when I was talking about taking a few steps back and actually look at it as a systemic problem, as opposed to looking at a strategy to try and lift those numbers, when in actual fact you really have to strip that onion a bit more to get women in that place in the first place. So for me, it goes back to the redistribution of power in our society, and it always has to come down to the fact that males in our society do hold the most power. And for me, that's your very first challenge, and why. And you have to look at it in a systemic, from a systemic point of view, because as individuals, it's very difficult to pave the way. We can keep doing our work, we can keep fighting, we can keep protesting, but actually it's systemic, and it's our government, it's our society, it's a cultural thing that has to change.
But those jobs, like the childcare jobs and so forth, part-time cleaning jobs, all those part-time, and a lot of casual or cash-in-hand stuff is done by women. If they actually took the women out of those positions, basically the economy would fall apart, wouldn't it?
I guess the stat here would be that that it would be the sort of exact jobs, or that CEOs might not be paid. And this I find appalling, is if a male CEO got the same position, he would be paid more than a female CEO in the same position. And, you know, that according to the board or whoever decides the pay rates, but I think that's pretty poor.
That's because men's golf clubs are longer and they cost more. I think, Andy, you should just stop it. Right, get over yourself. Have you ever tried to buy a set of golf clubs?
I love it, but I don't know where it's going.
You're right. I mean, but is that because men are in those positions, or the women should be in those positions because they're trained, or as you were saying earlier, that the training isn't there for these women to be in those positions anyway?
It is probably all of the above. But, I mean, when you've got a simple case of the same position and one person is a male and the other is a female and they're doing the same job and one gets paid less, I think that's where you've got a serious issue.
Yeah. Well, take it into the, equal opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's basically what it's about.
Yeah.
Is equal pay, equal skill, equal talent.
It's strange, though, that we haven't got it. I don't know. I find that strange. I don't find it so strange that the whole casual work and women in, the other jobs part-time, I don't find that strange at all, because people get used. That makes sense to me. But to have two positions, as you're saying, Jack and Jane, and Jane being paid a lot less, it's just bizarre to me.
I'm not sure how often it happens. I don't know how they put together these stats, whether, as you said, they're taking into account the level of pay for people doing contract and casual work, but just reflecting on my work, I've always been paid, but mine's quite low, lowly paid. But I've always been paid the same as my male colleagues. I've never encountered that myself, and a lot of people I know haven't as well. So I don't know where this is happening necessarily. Yeah. I don't know whether you have any.
It's at your workplace, isn't it, Anne-Marie?
Yeah.
The women's circus.
All those women are getting paid the same as me.
If you can cartwheel, you get more.
You know, the truth is I can't cartwheel.
I know. You did.
That's a point.
She came out and she said, I can't cartwheel, but I can German roll or something.
German wheel.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
She can German wheel.
Some people know it as the Russian wheel.
Really?
It's true.
Oh, I don't know. We've got a text in from Sam saying, I agree the equality and inclusivity needs to begin from the bottom up so that these positions are made equally available. Mm. Spot on, Sam.
Yeah, spot on. It is. It's about access. We need to start stripping it back and looking at access and opportunities for women.
Do you think then that we're seen as whinging? Oh, you want more. Oh, you want equal pay. Oh, go get your period or something. Do you think we have a lot of that kind of dissension? That kind of discussion?
I think that's definitely a bit of a throwback that happens as soon as this issue comes up, which is such a shame because, you know, it's a genuine issue that needs to be addressed and, you know, and the whole idea that feminism is now a dirty word and, you know,
is it? Young you'd women like that? Don't...
Yeah. It's not a dirty word.
Yeah.
Would you, Andy, though, agree that women really are the best? Oh, sorry, I was just
not always.
I was stirring the pot a little bit.
I'm waiting for the barrage of texts and man haters.
Yeah. No, but would it be fair to say that it wouldn't matter what a woman said, she'd be charged with complaining or whinging?
That is a good point. And, you know, I am not a man hater. I am not, you know, of anything like that. I love men. I love the men in my life. But you do. You complain about something. It's like, oh, you're feminist or you're lesbian or whatever. And you go, no, I'm actually just complaining because it's offensive or it's whatever.
It's called discrimination.
No, is it? Can you get that with fries? I think you can. We're going to roll off into a song now. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
Crystal clear.
Evening. This is Hear Me Roar with Sue, Anne-Marie and Andy and Lisa pushing the buttons. And thank you for the texter who made me laugh who said, got any music. So we'll dedicate that, which was, Lisa, you'll have to pass me the piece of paper. It's Tess McKenna. That was on the Sunny Coast. She's a new artist. I don't think she's ever possibly been played or she's just starting out on being played. So do support that local Aussie artist. Now, joining us in the studio is Deborah Jay. Now, she comes from Personalised Lifestyle Assistance. Sounds kind of fancy. Welcome to Joy.
Thank you, Sue.
Oh, you're very soft there. Hello.
Hello.
Come in a bit closer. Now, I'm going to say it. You were on TV, weren't you? Were you on TV, not on radio before?
A long time ago. It was a small community station. The name escapes me, but last week I was actually interviewed for the 7:30 report.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's really famous.
She's really famous.
Very scary.
We're checking our famous levels now. You've just won. It's not fair. Now, tell us what you do, because you actually go out and you try and support people and families with somebody with a disability.
Our small little service was actually established in 2003 by families who predominantly had young adults with intellectual disability. And what the families were finding when their young adults left school was that the services that were available were segregating their son or daughter from the community. And families had more hopes, really, for their sons and daughters. And so, really, they were looking for their sons and daughters to become included in the community, pursue work and education and recreation like their other sons and daughters did without disabilities. So we were really set up as a service to inform, educate and advise people with disabilities and families on social inclusion.
Social inclusion is a bit of an in-word now.
Anne-Marie, an in-word, yep.
You're in the women's circus. Do you have that word or those words bandied around a bit?
A lot. That's the big cry when you're going for applications is
Social inclusion.
Social inclusion. Is that what it's called? Yeah, totally. I've just written another application and it's about providing opportunities for social inclusion. It's a big thing around mental health. And yep.
Definitely. Deb. And Sue and I were talking before, and really I think social inclusion is, or belonging to the community and connecting to it, is an issue for all of us these days as technology takes off. So no wonder it's in the spotlight, I think, these days, particularly around people who are likely to be marginalised from the community because of mental health issues or disability or language barriers and those types of things.
So you're looking across the spectrum of disability?
Predominantly we support people with intellectual disability. However, we have done some fairly creative work with a group of people with physical disabilities to establish a small service called Nightlife, which provides basically a mobile attendant care service overnight for people so that they can go out and come home when they want, rather than go to bed like they used to do at about 8 o'clock at night, because the staff in traditional services knocked off at that time.
Yep.
What sort of things do you find that people are missing out on that they aren't being included in? What are some of the key sort of areas?
One of the major issues, I think, is work. People with disabilities don't have the same opportunities of work. However, the research has shown that people with disabilities are often more reliable employees and take less sick leave and those sorts of things. The other thing, and the big issue really in disability services at the moment, is accommodation. The waiting lists are huge, and predominantly, once you have a disability, the only type of accommodation is with your family or in a group home. So we've been very interested in looking at alternatives to support people to live in their own place, even with complex disabilities. And the little project that we're working through the Melbourne Community Fund and through the Macro Melbourne projects is around trying to inspire people to think about how people might be supported to live in their own place. And there are quite a few people now that we've assisted to do that. There's a young man called Cameron who lives in Warrigal who has dual disability, so both a mental health issue and intellectual disability. And he was living at home with his parents, and like his brothers and sisters, wanted to leave home. He lived in a bungalow in the backyard and became very isolated, basically. And so we did some work with Cameron and his family, and he also wanted work, so we developed a vision, really, and a plan around Cameron to move into Warrigal. That's where he wanted to live. And he's now lived in his own place for over 5 years. And he lives with what we call a housemate. And the housemate is basically a person without a disability who receives free rent in return for some support. So in that way, it actually costs much less, and it's like an exchange of social capital. Rather than paid supports, people build relationship. So they're the types of arrangements that we're interested in, where we can bring people together in the community.
Sorry, what sort of impact has that had on Cameron's life? Is that
It's had quite an extraordinary impact, actually. His independence has increased greatly because he doesn't rely on mum and dad to do everything now. He also has met lots of people through his housemates because they've got friends and families too. I think his self-esteem's increased. He also now works. He has a small job in a small business as a receptionist, actually. And when there were some cutbacks with the company, he was actually kept on because people saw that Cameron actually not only worked hard but brought something to the workplace, and people enjoyed actually working with him.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It's a beautiful story.
I'll let you talk.
Okay. Do you think that, Deb, the culture of working with disability is what has to be tackled? The culture of the workers, the culture of the services? To look at a person-centred approach to work with folk, for me, again, it goes back to shifting the culture within the services and with the workers.
Definitely. I think we have many assumptions or cultural perspectives on people, and our assumptions can guide what we believe is possible. So if we believe that people with disability need special care away from the community, then that's what we'll provide. But if we believe that people with disabilities are unique human beings and can contribute, then we're more likely to look for opportunities in the community. So it is a big shift. But when we find that people are supported well to participate, the community actually, their fears and their the things that they're not sure about, that actually reduces.
This is really interesting, Jay. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good evening. You are listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. That gorgeous song was I Go by Jess Harlan. She's an up-and-coming artist, and that's from her latest CD, which I can't even think of the name of the CD. Neon Heartache. There you go. So go out and get that CD. It's a beauty. Now, Deborah, we've been talking about disability, and you had a lovely story about Cameron, who basically was isolated in his bungalow out in the back, and since then he's now living independently with a sharemate and working independently. Now, I've taught in institution schools back in the day, pre-1990s, and I do believe times have changed, that the big group residential settings have gone, that there are more kids in the workplace, there are more opportunities. Would you disagree or agree?
Oh, so I think, you know, we have made some progress, but I think we have a long, long way to go. Most of the institutions now are closed or are in the process of closing down, but many people with disabilities still live in group homes. And my experience, not with all of them, but with many of them, is that they are run like a workplace, and they are sort of like a mini institution in many ways, with lots of rules and programs. People are unlikely to get their individual needs met living in a group situation. However, you know, there are some good group homes, but most of the people that we've supported are looking for something else. We supported one family, and Warren lived in a group home that was governed by families, and his skills actually deteriorated. He just didn't get really the attention that he needed. And so his family were actually inspired by a workshop that we ran on people living in your own home. And Warren now lives with a housemate in Doncaster. And it's a sort of a similar arrangement to Cameron. Warren has quite reasonably high support needs. But the other important thing in this work is that it's not enough just to live in your own home. You need something to do. And so Warren was going to a day program, and he now does things in the community. One of his passions was the police. And so we thought about how we could harness that. And he did some work experience at the local police station. And he now actually volunteers at the Melbourne Police Museum.
Oh, and that's fantastic down there. Has anybody been there? Oh, I love it.
No.
Yeah, well, yeah, you don't get out much, do you? It's a really, really good place. Yeah, sorry. Just to mention that.
Yeah. No, and, you know, Christine Nixon actually really supported that effort. And so we were Warren's family was very grateful for that. And Warren also volunteers at St Vincent's Hospital. He also displays his art, does some volunteer work for the Salvation Army, goes to the Salvation Army band practice every Wednesday night. So it's quite a shift from someone who was very isolated in a group home to someone that's now with someone with significant needs being supported in the community.
Is there a push for those activities to sort of like the police, working in the police museum and those sort of areas that could really, you know, help people with a bit more of a purpose and just sort of getting a house and getting established? Do you work with that side of things as well?
We really work from the individual's point of view because it's really important to work on what people are actually interested in and their passions and their abilities. Once we've established that, then we do the work with wherever we could find in the community that someone could pursue that interest. So then we might be talking, you know, more deeply with, you know, associations or clubs or workplaces around how they might support an individual.
Is that a difficult task? Do you come up against many sort of roadblocks with that one, or is it?
The past 7 years of working in a more individualised manner, I think only one person has ever been rejected or said no, you can't come here based on their disability. In actual fact, if people are well supported, people in the community are really they go a long way to supporting people and trying to make them welcome. However, some people may have to overcome some fears, and so if the supports aren't in place, people's questions may not be answered. So it's really important, you know, to support people well.
We have to wrap up. What about everything comes at a price? How do you get funding? I mean, these things sound fantastic, but how do we put all these kind of things in place?
Well, PLA was actually, it's really a capacity type of organisation, a capacity and thinking building type of organisation. And we've been funded by the Department of Human Services since 2003 with non-recurrent grants. That money will now run out in June this year, and so we're seeking financial support. We're still in discussions with the department and the minister, and we've had a lot of good support from the Melbourne Community Fund, in particular the Macro Melbourne project, and they're actually running an expo on the 24th
of March
At 9:30 at KPMG in Collins Street. So if people would like to come along to that and find out more about the work we're doing, plus, you know, there are 13 other grassroots projects that are presenting at that forum. So if people have some spare money and would like to contribute,
Andy,
we'd welcome it.
On my huge wage.
On a huge, she earns a lot, I heard. Yeah. It was a lie, but I heard.
Sometimes preventative measures, it's not very easy to find funding for. Most of our funding these days seems to be aimed at crisis, rather than preventing people from living in group homes or requiring funding. Sometimes some of the families that we support never require funded government services because they can get on and do the things by tapping into community.
And some just don't have those skills or know where to tap into.
Many families say to us, I don't know where to start. Mm. And once you get them started,
They don't know how to stop. Now, talking about that, we have to just finally, how do families find you?
You can log on to our website, which is www.plavic.net.au.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thanks, Deb.
Thanks
for joining us today. It's been lovely talking about it. And I think it's so important that we do make steps forward. And like you said, we have come a distance, but there's certainly a long way to go. And I think we do need to sort of think outside that square or that Russian circle that we were speaking about earlier, Anne-Marie. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We'll be back soon. Thank you. Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar with Sue, Andy and Anne-Marie. That was a really interesting interview with Deborah Jay, wasn't it?
Inspiring. Yes, the stories inspiring. Are beautiful.
They are. And Deb's going to come back a couple of months from now with a family and actually go through their journey. Now, we had a text in from Sean saying, it says ABI and physically disabled and gay and isolated in a garage and dungeon. Now, Deb was walking out the door. And we've actually passed her on. So she's read your text, Sean, and she's noted that you need some assistance to basically escape. So we've put her on to you, or you onto her.
Very good thing.
And Deb's going to be terrific and certainly help you move forward. Now, talking about moving forward, but you were talking about golf clubs before.
I was laughing at your joke about golf clubs, wasn't I?
That's because I pay you to laugh at me, darling.
It's a very small amount. It's not equal pay for the work that I do, I tell you.
That's true, but somebody who would know whether...
pay the men more.
Well, we're going to ask. Now, we're going to talk to Leanne Spain, and she's starting up a whole new club, and it involves some Dykes on Spikes, Leanne.
It does indeed. Hello, how are you?
Welcome to Joy. We're very good. Now, do men's golf clubs cost more?
Usually the memberships these days are equal, as in the cost of, but you still find pockets where men dominate the show from an administrative point of view.
Oh, okay. What's this rubbish about women having, like, teeing off that bit further? What is that? That's just stupid.
I will take any advantage we can get.
Oh, sweetheart. Fly that banner high.
Why not use it?
I want to tee off with the boys tee off. Maybe that's saying something.
You're most welcome to.
Tell us about Dykes on Spikes.
Well, Dykes on Spikes is a new concept that we're trying to come up with. We've got an inaugural event starting on the 2nd of May this year up at Castlemaine Golf Course. So, for you listeners, that's not far from Dalesford. It's about 5 km out from Castlemaine on the Pyrenees Highway. And we've got a special day dedicated for Dykes who enjoy playing golf to come along and have a great social day and a barbecue afterwards.
Oh, so you're ringing our bells now.
That sounds good. I might head up that way. I play really good mini golf, Leanne.
Mini golf.
My name's Anne Marie.
You'd be a great candidate then to enter this event.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Could I ask you a question,
yes,
Leanne?
Please.
Oh, actually, I'll tell you a wee story. I had visitors from overseas and I took them to Anglesey to see the kangaroos.
Lovely course.
Yes. Do you know what? It costs more for women than it does for men.
No.
I promise you, I went there not even 5 weeks ago.
There's the police now.
Yeah. Do you hear it?
I can hear it in my background.
Oh, darn, it's coming for me.
They're coming for me.
Yeah, so just for your information.
How much is the difference?
$25.
$5. There was a $5 difference between the men and the women. The men, we come up with this idea that it costs more for women because maybe they use more toilet paper or we weren't quite sure how that worked.
I'm so going to follow this one.
You
up.
Must.
I will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they just have more strokes as they go around.
Oh, she's quick. She's quick. So why golf?
Why golf? Because I'm a golf lover. And I've played with, been a member of golf clubs, and I've also played socially with a network of personal friends. And there really isn't an event out there on the calendar that we can come together as club players or social players and have a really great day with like-minded dykes out there.
Mm. Dykes on Swiss Bikes. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good title, isn't it?
Leanne, I asked you this the other day, but for partners of golfing golf lovers, what could they do on the day?
For
golf widows, yeah. For golf wags.
Golf widows. Oh, well, they could caddy. Oh, they can come around
you can stick that. I'm not caddying for no one. Equal rights.
I would suggest that they play, actually. They should play.
Yep. Well, is there a support group? Does anybody get to drive one of those? But you're not driving, Emery. Does anybody get to drive one of those things?
Golf carts?
Yeah.
No, they don't have those, actually, at Castlemaine. They don't need to. It's a nice, easy course to get around. There's no undulating greens out there or fairways out there to do.
Sounds fantastic, the social, the community side of it. Yeah, Leanne?
Well, this is what we're trying to establish. Yeah. And I know a lot of people sort of get a bit... nervous about playing golf if they're not don't have an official handicap, for example. But the two-person Ambrose, which is the event that we're actually using on the day, is quite an equalising sort of competition. Do you need to know a little bit about that?
I have no idea what you just said.
Okay, well, you know how people who play at courses or at clubs have an official handicap.
Yeah, they show off more.
Yeah, they do. The lower they've got, the better they are.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So people like me who have got a handicap of 33 play with my partner on 12 find it very challenging to get out there on the golf course. But what this Ambrose competition does is actually equalises a lot of that, and you can actually pair up with it, like my partner, and we have a team handicap. And we play as a team against another team of two players, and we go out there and enjoy a really good day and find we're competitive.
Is there teams of two or four? Because we're considering a four joy contingent here in this room.
Ah, very good. Teams of two.
Oh. What about the 19th hole then?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely on bar price drinks.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Anne-Marie's on board.
So when is it?
When is it? The 2nd of May.
And how do people get on to you?
I think I've given you an email address there. It's actually higst875
okay.
at bigpond.com.
Okay, so they can send you an email and basically, so expressions of interest at this stage and then take it from there?
Look, we're up at the golf day at Chillout. Very, very strong response when we handed out a few flyers up there because they have an event up there, as you might be aware of.
That you were the founding president
of. I was, indeed. And things have just gone bigger and better, and we're hoping we'll do the same with Dykes on Spikes. And so there's a lot of interest at the moment, but we're also not just looking for golfers to enter the event, but we're also looking for some sponsors to the event. Hopefully donation of some prizes. If you give people a bit of an incentive in the form of good prizes, it often attracts some interest in players coming along and joining us. So
I'd play for a beer. I don't need much to keep me going.
There you go. Well, a couple of the organisers have donated some prizes, personal prizes themselves. So hopefully we can get a bit more interest in that regard as well.
Super. Just give us that email address one more time.
It's actually higst875 at bigpond.com.
There you go. Thanks for joining us, Leanne.
Yay, Leanne.
Look forward to seeing you.
I'll see you on the 19th hole. I may just skip the other 18.
That's okay. You're most welcome.
I'll see you at the bar.
See ya. Bye.
See you later. Oh, so there you go. I am going to follow up that whole golfy
thing,
though.
You should. It's a true story.
Really?
I only say that when it's true.
Yeah.
Everything else can be challenged.
It's a scary thing. Now, a couple of other things on our notice board. Michelle Parsons is playing because Sheba is celebrating her 6th birthday. Aww.
Happy birthday.
Isn't that nice?
Good girls.
Good girls. Now, she's playing at the Glasshouse Hotel Saturday the 13th of March, 51 Gipps Street in Collingwood, which is odd because the Sheba normally isn't there. But it's
moved.
It's moved. Is it moved permanently or just?
I heard yesterday it had moved permanently, but really? I'm open to challenge. I'm not always right to people.
Well, yeah, but it's only $10, 9 p.m. till 8, so that's cool. So get down there, and we love Michelle Parsons. Lisa's nodding because she's in love with Michelle Parsons. Actually, she's in love with every interview that we've ever had, but that's a whole other story. Now, there's also a Women's Day comedy event. Now, I'm just passing this lovely piece of paper over. Because if you haven't been able to celebrate anything and you think, I need a bit of a laugh, the Women's Hospital have a comedy event running. Who's going to be appearing there? Do you know? There you go.
That would be Nellie Thomas and Fiona O'Loughlin, Cal Wilson, Catherine Devaney, Hannah Gadsby, Melinda Buttle, Lisa Mazza and Kelly Nash.
So it should be a good event. And when is it?
3 o'clock on Saturday at the Melbourne Town Hall.
Hello. Get down there and see that. Now, thank you for our virginal flight into radio with Yotaru. Have you enjoyed your stint?
Loved it. Loved every minute.
I particularly like it.
I could tell.
Yeah, she's really quite shy, isn't she? We've enjoyed your company and we're looking forward to your company next week. We've got the potty mouth, shall I say? I shall, because she's loved that. We've got Yana Alana. No Piranha, but Yana Alana coming on next week. So no doubt she'll have a few words about pussy, I would say. You've been listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.